art, culture, politics, activism. Now, art in the pandemic age. Have you ever wondered why artists do what they do? What is their purpose? What are they trying to accomplish? I'm your host, Kyle Roman. Welcome to Artivism Now. Artivism, defined, is a portmanteau word combining art and activism. How is it that artists push the boundary of their medium? How do they move societies forward? How do they resolve issues in their neighborhoods, both local and worldwide? These questions are what we set out to answer by interviewing artists locally and the world over. We will get answers to those questions that artists put out there in the community.
On this episode of Artivism Now, we welcome, from across the bay in San Francisco, back from season one, Jaime Santiago Longa.
All right, welcome back. We are here with Jaime Santiago Longa out of San Francisco. Welcome back, Jaime.
Yeah, great to be back, Kyle. Thanks for having me on again. Really an honor to be on here. So really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate that.
That's crazy. Like, we're still in the pandemic now. We're still, dealing with it. So just glad to be here. Glad to be okay. And we're all surviving.
Yes. So, yeah, definitely. Definitely happy for your health and your family's health. And continued health, hopefully, for everybody inching towards that vaccine. You're returning to the program, and I have to say that your episode is the most listened to episode out of all of them on Artivism Now. So I think that's pretty cool. We've had about 19 episodes or so, and we're coming back to you because obviously, people like listening to the in-depth conversation on paintings, and so we're gonna bring it back, and hopefully, we can, bring some artists closer to pursuing their career. So we're gonna start from your Instagram, because honestly, that's kind of like our foot in the door to your work. The Instagram is Jaime Santiago Longa, and please go and follow that. You'll be updated with some amazing work. The first piece that I would love to get into is entitled "The Great Equalizer," and Jaime does a great job of giving us some context on each post. So "The Great Equalizer," oil on canvas, is 24x36. The transience of life hits all of us at certain times and forces us to examine what is of real value. We are surrounded by a myriad of distractions, false notions of comfort, quick fixes, misinformation, urban decay, conflicts of every kind. In the midst of all of this, do we take the time we need to be still and remember the great equalizer? Death will come to us all, and it is up to each of us to choose how we will spend our days, the type of person we want to be, and what perspective we will live by. Our free will to choose how we go about living is at once sobering and beautiful. And so that's the context you provide us as we're viewing The Great Equalizer. Tell the audience what was possibly that moment or that thing that led you to start this piece?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what initially drew me to begin that piece was kind of a progressive type of thing where it came together in different parts. But I think the first thing from what I remember that inspired me is looking at the painting by Zurbaran. I'm not sure what the title is. It might just be called Memento Mori or something. But the figure that you're seeing in the middle there is an homage to Zurbaran's painting. And I mean, just the quality of his work is so spectacular. He paints figures that are in this really dark environment, and it's such a simple composition where you have the friar looking at a skull in his hands. And just the amount of emotional depth and meaning that you could glean from that, it just really struck me. And I had always been inspired by that piece. So it just kept coming to me. And I was like, I want to do kind of my own spin on a similar subject matter. And I was so inspired by the piece where I literally just wanted to pay an homage to Zurbaran. So I put that figure right in the center of my piece, and I make no bones about it. Like, I'm directly copying Zurbaran's figure. So, I mean, that's clearly my inspiration for that portion of the painting. And I mean, I feel like I added a little bit more color and vibrancy to it just to correspond with the surrounding, but nonetheless, it's the same figure that we're looking at. And from there, it was just really a matter of really thinking about this topic of transience and death and decay, especially within the context of what we're dealing with in these times. You know, it's such a big thing right now that people are thinking about with all that's going on with the pandemic and jobs being lost. There's just all kinds of crazy things. And I just really wanted to make a painting that was kind of synthesizing all of these emotions and things that people are dealing with in these times. And I guess that's one of the reasons why that painting really stuck with me, because I just remember looking at it and I was like, wow, that's really speaking in these days, even though it was painted like hundreds of years ago. So so there's all kinds of concepts that you can find in this piece. Like, there's aspects dealing with like we said about transience, and we also have kind of just like questioning how are we spending our time, in the circumstances that we're in. I feel like that's an important thing to ask yourself. And I have to be honest with myself too, and that's part of this piece, is just kind of me meditating on like, what am I doing with the time that I have right now? And it's just like, you mentioned like in the description there, how I mentioned like there's all these distractions that we could have in life. Yeah. And that's another part of it where it's like, are we being distracted by things that are really not important or not necessary? And I definitely was asking myself that. It's like, how am I managing my time, and how am I making use of like the life that I'm living? And so it's just all of these things coming together and really synthesizing this aspect of transience and the traditional memento mori theme that you find like all throughout art history. So that's really what it's all about right now, I think, for that piece.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like you said, there's so many different concepts. There's you'd mentioned the distractions part too, and the on either side, flanked on the friar figure, are kind of disoriented, distorted, ghostly, apparition type beings. And they're both kind of, they have their phone towards their face, or they're looking down at their phone. And so, there's that kind of virtual versus, actual reality kind of sense that you get in terms of the lives we're living right now, right? And as we see in this, the pandemic continues to inspire, right? It continues to inspire, you know, in a lot of ways, it continues to inspire us to look at the realities around us, and the things that we couldn't necessarily or didn't even want to try and confront in our quote normal lives beforehand. You know, maybe speak on that concept of those, the kind of ghostly figures and what that represented, and then maybe pop in a little bit of the technique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So like whenever I make a piece like this, that's a little bit more contemporary, it's really an evolution as I go through the process. And that was one of those things that came into play as I was making the piece. I was like, I feel like there's something else I could add here. And so as I was thinking about it, I was like, okay, maybe I can add these figures that are in like more modern clothes. And they're, like you said, they're pretty much in the same pose as the friar. The difference is that they're looking at their phone rather than looking at a skull. Yeah. So it's really a juxtaposition of like two ideas. Of, there's like one meditating upon death, and then there's one like just getting caught up in whatever it is, you know, that you can add on their phone.
The so slow kind death of related the world around them, right?
Exactly. And
the slow death from Twitter.
That's what I was thinking about too, is like this aspect of misinformation and just all kinds of things that people get on their phones, or it might even just be like an overload of information at times where they've just got so much going on and they're nonstop like hooked on their phones, to where it's like it's just, it becomes something that distracts them from reality. And you know, so that's part of the reason why I painted them in kind of a ghostly type of image, where it's almost like they're fading into the background that's behind them. They're like these disembodied figures and just fading off, you know, and again dealing with that aspect of transience where you can see the figure, but at the same time, they're like fading. They're almost like they're being chiseled off of the canvas in a way. So, that's definitely what I was thinking there with this juxtaposition of, you know, the quick fixes that we get in our contemporary world, like from the media, from our phones, from like our social media lives, all of that. Not to say it's all bad or anything, but at times it can become such a huge distraction in our lives that really becomes like a time vampire. And especially if you're an artist, you know, I think it's so tempting for an artist to just be online a lot of the time and, you know, be looking at work or things that inspire them. But at the same time, you have to balance that out with really setting aside time for work and silence, and really meditating upon the things that you want to say, and just looking within yourself rather than looking like at some other type of information to almost act as like doing the work for you, I guess you could say. It's just this interesting thing. It's all about that balance of like being informed, but not overload to the point where it just becomes like distracting for you and taking away the things that are very important in reality for your life. So,
yeah, it's a profound statement that is captured in the very pose and holding of the phone, kind of as that prop to kind of, you know, just, it really does. I mean, if you want to just get the, you know, the 1%, you know, below the surface of the analysis, it's the time sacrificed, right? How precious time is, and how much screen time is spent, you know, during this type of a living situation, and therefore, you know, it kind of like, it really does just like put into perspective the activity of screen time versus the precious nature of the moments that we live within. And so I feel like it, you know, they might as well be holding a skull, right? They might as well be, you know, at that point.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I really
A great thing. Now go for it.
Okay, cool. No worries. I'm totally like and you know, inexplicably drawn to the back to the industrial and the city settings that you have too as the backdrop. And because I know what that means to you and to your upbringing and to what, you know, what you've meditated upon and reflected upon as an artist. Is there anything specific in terms of what you chose to depict in the background, and maybe what is the importance or, you know, symbolism of it?
Yeah, sure. It's actually interesting because the background was the initial, besides the Zurbaran painting, the background was kind of the initial thing that I was really wanting to paint at first. And then it's kind of like the Zurbaran piece inspired me too, and these two things came together. But I think the reason why I combine the two is that what you're seeing in the background is this sense of decay. Like if you're looking at it closely, you can see a train in the background. It's like this really dilapidated old train, just totally run down, rusty. And it is a real scene, you know, like I remember taking that reference. I believe it was like south of Market somewhere. I don't know, like probably near the Caltrain station. I'm not sure. Nice. I don't remember exactly, but yeah, you know, just capturing this urban environment that's dilapidated. You can really see mm-hmm. the sense of time, how it's just taken over this whole atmosphere. And at the same time, you also have a bridge in the background. So you can see that bridge and, you know, just the metaphor that a bridge can have, you know, a bridge between two realities, two worlds. So that was all kind of what I was thinking about there. So you could read that in a number of ways. You could read this bridge as like what is the bridge that connects us? What is this bridge, you know, between this world and what may lay beyond? So those are kind of the things that I was dealing with when I was painting the background in relation to the subject matter that I chose. Yeah. Like the theme that I chose is what I mean to say. But yeah, just really dilapidated and rustic. I'm very drawn to those types of environments because it's not something that people normally would want to paint, at least a lot of people. You know, they were looking for like some beautiful sunset or something, but right. I really enjoyed finding these really run down dilapidated places. I just find them so interesting, and mm-hmm. there's so much character in them, and just amount of information and things to think about when you're painting a subject matter like that is really profound to me. So yeah, it just all comes together and forms this one thing. And you can, in relation to that, you can see obviously the cutout type of things that I'm doing. That's like a more modern approach where you have these abstract shapes cutting into the painting and separating like extremely, I guess you could say like realistic painting with these cutout things that are going into it and breaking apart in a sense. So. That was another thing that I kind of added in later on. I felt like the painting needed it. So, yeah, it was really for me.
I actually really love that part about it because now that, you know, we've been discussing it, you have your bridge and then you have this cutout. It's kind of like this void, right? And so it kind of can leave you if you're kind of going there, you know, maybe there's this bridge and there's this hope, and then there's this void, there's this unknown, this just kind of gap in between, right? Which is always fascinating to explore in painting, in any art medium. You know, what is the unknown, right? And the unknown oftentimes is unseen. I can get a lot of that kind of unseenness, if I can even make that into a word, from the void, from that cutout technique. I really think it's a pleasurable interrupter, if I could coin that term as well, in this piece. And I do love the kind of the urban decay feel to a lot of the backgrounds that you have, because especially in this one, right? Time is a large subject matter in this piece, and time and life. And so that decay kind of can posit that and lend some credibility to it. Whereas, like you'd said, you know, a lot of people, they'll have a sunset and they'll have, or maybe a, you know, clean lines, whereas this is, you know, represents the technique that you have here really represents the true reality of urban life in terms of structures. Is that the old Bay Bridge in the background?
Oh, it might be. I was gonna say
that's a great choice if you did the old Bay Bridge in the background.
It might be. I can't guarantee it, but it might be the one. But yeah, it's one of those references where I've been meaning to paint it for many years, and it's been just so long since I've had it in my archives, and finally I got around to, you know, using it. And so it's been in my stockpile of imagery that I've been wanting to make a painting out of. It definitely stood out for that reason, really. It's just this aspect of being a bridge and dilapidated environment. So it's definitely, I really appreciate that you say it captures like the reality, you know, of urban life. Like that's really,
it does.
I think one of my main goals in my work is to really capture what's actually happening rather than like an idealization or how things ought to be, you know. Like that's certainly a valid way of approaching it, but I feel like in a lot of my work I'm just trying to capture like this is how it actually is, this is how things are going on right now, and using kind of the abstract influences to emphasize those points that I'm making. And so that's awesome, you know, that you were able to feel that, you know, from the piece.
It's definitely a it hits you when you lay eyes on it. And then of course the vibrancy of the red choice, kind of in different, falling in different ways across. It seems like there's some dripping, there's some kind of almost like sprayed across. Describe your technique, or maybe even the represent. Maybe it represents what everybody think it would represent, but in your own words, what does it represent? And then maybe what technique did you use?
Yeah, definitely. So the red that you're seeing like scattered throughout the image, I guess really my original intention for, I always like to leave it kind of open-ended, but what it was speaking for me was like this aspect of blood, you know, and tying that into death and life as well, you know, blood is a life source. So it kind of represents both of these things. And so just having the blood, if you could put it in that way, throughout the piece, breaking it into abstract sections. So like it's a glaze technique. So what I'm doing is I'm thinning out the paint enough to where I'm applying it on top of that dried layer of paint underneath. And so I can still see the highlighted finish image underneath it. And I just do this one layer of red over the top of it. So it's got this like just uniformity in the red areas. And then that's immediately followed up by a continuation that's in the actual colors that you're seeing in the environment. So it's definitely one of those things where I had to think about it, like where do I want it positioned and how do I want it to look? I definitely incorporated the drips, as you said, which kind of emphasizes this aspect of blood, and it's a very almost type of dreary look, I guess you could say. And like particularly under the figure where it's just dripping down and and almost like into the earth type of thing. Yeah. And then you have some drips that are going in the reverse direction, like upwards. Mm-hmm. So it's just like all of this that really crazy stuff going, you know. And I was just really wanting to push myself to incorporate that. And in some of the work that I'm doing prior to that and even after, like you could see this theme where I'm incorporating some of this glazing and almost blood looking type of abstraction over more realistic imagery. So it's kind of a continuation of this theme that I'm doing in a lot of my work, where like a lot of the messages are tied into this aspect of time and transience, death and decay. So I guess that you could say that that's one of the main ways that I'm conveying that in the work that I'm doing right now. And just trying to find like new and fresh ways to incorporate that technique in each piece.
It's very well done. And honestly, when I first looked at it, my original just kind of impression on the vibrancy of the red, and then from the technique and the positioning of it, it almost looks like it could be not necessarily on the environment, but within or mm-hmm. within the viewer's lens. I almost look at it and I'm thinking, okay, something's going on in my eyes, or something sprayed over the lens I'm looking at this. So it's almost like that's me. I don't know that maybe that's a little bit of a reach, but I feel like I feel like it's like that could honestly be something that I connect with as a viewer,
for sure.
which kind of gives another element to the thinning out of the paint, your technique, right? It keeps everything in place behind it. You can see everything. You can see the shape of everything that is behind it. And yet you have this kind of spilled vibrancy over that kind of works to define everything else contained. So it's, if I could think of it that way, it puts us, it puts everything from that death to life, a spectrum of death to life. It really kind of ties it all in. So I really enjoyed that part of it, because it just kind of gives it that defining feature, outside of course the Memento Mori figure, which acts as the main subject. So I really enjoyed viewing this for the first time and discussing it. I think this piece is going to go well. When you guys are you going to include this in the gallery, or?
I hope so. Yeah, like that's my plan down the line, is to find like a good gallery or home for it. So we'll see. It's definitely a different type of piece from what I normally exhibit currently in gallery. Okay. So usually, I have my cityscapes and all that, but this is a little bit different from the usual, with like the more contemporary stylizations thrown in, and even some of the subject matter. So, but yeah, that's definitely the plan. So Good. We'll see where it ends up.
Yeah, if there's any gallery owners out there, this is, you can build around this piece. This one, and you're producing other works within this theme, you had said, right? So in yep. theory, there's going to be a collection that's going to be descending from this type of a theme. So and pandemic inspired art representing life and death on the spectrum with urban decay as the backdrop. Check it out. It's on the Instagram, Jaime Santiago Longa. So thank you for chatting with us about that one.
Absolutely. It's great.
So we have another one that is kind of the last time we had spoken, you had been talking about the Philippines, right? And what that means to you in terms of your own ethnicity, and then also in terms of the modern societal afflictions that are happening in the Philippines due to various types of trauma. Why don't we set the stage for the Our Father oil painting? Tell us about the Philippines and what draws you to the country of the Philippines in terms of what they're going through at this point.
Yeah, that one's fresh off the easel, literally. Like, I feel like I think I finished that one literally like last week or something. So, so it's definitely fresh in my mind.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been doing a number of pieces that are dealing with the Philippines and the culture, and really, it's what I see it as is my own perspective and the things that I've experienced because my family's from there, and I've been there, traveled around and experienced different things. So it's just really kind of meditating upon my own thoughts and my perspective of what's going on there, both in the past as well as in the present. So this painting in particular was inspired by a reference that I had from quite a few years back. I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was in the island of Bicol, which is where my mom's from. And when we were traveling there, it was my family and me, so we were all just kind of visiting, seeing family there, and going through the towns there. Obviously it's a third world environment, so it's very much different from what we have here in the States. And just the level of poverty and struggles that people are going through on the streets there is just a whole other level, from what we're used to. And I think one of the things that's been inspiring me lately with this painting and the painting I'm currently working on, which is in the works, is actually dealing with a very similar subject matter, is there's so much to be learned from those who are in poverty and those who don't have much. And one of the things that really came to me when I was making this piece and continuing to really meditate upon it even now in work is how people in those circumstances are being forced to be creative. And so the subject matter of this piece is dealing with this father. And this is reality, this is what is actually was happening, is the father is he's stealing metal scraps from the railroad nearby, fashioning them into knives that he can then sell, to tourists and whoever's in the area. So In a way, it's like it's a means of living for him, where he's forced to be creative and make these things in order to provide for his family. And you can see like the children that he has behind him. So, it's just, I mean, a sobering image for sure. Like to me, at least. And you know, it's not only that, but it's a number of things that I saw there. You know, there's so many instances where I could see that people are just being forced to be creative because that's the only way that they could make an income. It's almost the reverse here, you know, in the States where if you pursue a creative career, it's almost like looked down upon because they're like, oh, you know, you can't do much with that. But in that context, it's the opposite. It's almost like, well, I have to be like, I have to make something so that I can just, you know, pull it and have an income. So it's a very different mentality from what we have in the States. And personally for me, it's just extremely inspiring. Like I feel like I've learned so much more from just being inspired by people like that, where you see the joy too that they have even though they're going through so much, and you see the peace that a lot of them have. And it's just it's really something, and it certainly inspires me as a person, and had an impact on the way that I view life, and just not to take anything for granted that I have, and to really utilize my creativity in a positive way. So that's really the driving force that I had of this painting, and what I'm working on right now is kind of a continuation of a similar theme. That I would say that's like the overall kind of stuff that I was thinking about.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating way to look at it, and to and noticing the juxtaposition there as well, right? I feel like that is, you know, one of the main thematic elements of your work as well. It's how you're able to juxtapose the subject of this piece with actual reality, and then also in the urban decay piece, you're able to juxtapose that, you know, the pandemic life with actual life, and then here in the Our Father piece, you say in your context statement on Instagram, you say, witnessing such dire situations left a profound impact on my soul, and this piece depicts one such experience. The fight for justice continues all over the world, between the systems that leave the poor with less and the wealthy with more. And your background, another juxtaposition in this piece, is paradise, right? You have the systems of oppression and economic injustice at work, and people in abject suffering because of it, and yet there's this brightness, you know, there's this light, and when you talked about the people themselves, you expressed you know, how much joy there is and how much light that is in these people who are in these situations, and I just find it fascinating that we you know, are in our situations in the American pandemic situation, represented in the Great Equalizer, how much less light there is in our experiences. I don't know if you can speak to that, you know, and how that is, you know, represented and you know, maybe an experience that brought that along.
Yeah, you know, I think that's great you bring that up, because it's true that like the Great Equalizer piece is much darker in terms of the palette, I would say, even the concept, you could say. And then that's, contrasted with this lighter palette of the Our Father painting. And even the subject matter is a little bit more noble and dignified, you know, than the the great equalizer. Like, you can see the children, like his son next to him is looking up at his father, and
yeah,
it's almost like this generational thing where, like, that's another aspect I was thinking about, is like this generational continuation of like what's going to happen to the future of these kids, and how are the systems that are in play affecting that. So
yeah,
there's just so much behind it, and definitely the social justice aspect is a huge part of like a lot of my work. And I mean, I could go on about just the types of corruption and stuff in the Philippines. I mean, there's no bones about it. Like, there's so much going on there with this gap between rich and poor. And it's almost like an impossible situation to fix, you know, that the wealthy always want more, and they're never satisfied with what they have, and they're going to take bribes, and they're going to do whatever they want at the expense of everybody else who is in actual need. So it's just a sad reality. And, you know, it's not solely the fault of the government there. It's the fault of many generations of colonization from different countries. So it's, I mean, America is a part of it. That's part of the reason why I'm dealing with the subject matter, is because I'm a Filipino American. You know, I was born here, but like 99% of my family is in the Philippines. So it's definitely like a solid link. And I think it's just a unique perspective to have when you're a first generation American artist, really reflecting upon, okay, where did my family come from? What was their experiences? And, you know, how do I relate to the experiences of the country that my family comes from? So, it's all of these things. And I just feel like I'm obligated to say something, you know, that dealing with these very important themes. Because, you know, as an artist, to me, that's the most primary aspect is, what do you have to say? And like, how are you going to say it? So this is just really building upon the social justice aspect of the Philippines, and you could apply it to anywhere, really, in general.
Yeah, it's a fascinating piece, and it's on the Instagram, Jaime Santiago Longa, and make sure to go and follow it. We'll put a link in the description box of this episode, along with JaimeLonga.com, the website, right? We still have the cityscape work on there. Is the new theme work updated on there yet, or are we?
We are, actually, yeah. So I just recently added them on, so you could find them there. Both those pieces will be on the figure section. So,
go to the figure section, and you can find the pieces that we're talking about today. Those are great pieces, and a nice for you as an artist, a little bit of a pivot in a different direction. Probably feels good to kind of get that, another direction going in your work, to kind of, you know, open up, your opportunities and your to tell more stories, which I think is the main function of artists, especially right now in the continued pandemic situation that we live in.
It is, so,
absolutely. Yeah. And we were going to talk a little bit about artist growth from art student to professional artist. Let's start off first in terms of art school itself. Is there a specific mindset that one has to take, maintain, to get into and persevere through art school.
Yeah, for sure. I really love this this discussion because I'm a high school teacher at an art school, and I feel like it's just such an important thing to talk about, particularly for kids who are looking into a creative career in college. And, you know, it's hard enough as is when you have parents who may not support it. You know, I was blessed enough to where my parents were okay with it. And, you know, they were understanding of the career I chose to pursue, very unconventional. Yeah, it's definitely an important thing to talk about. And I think, so the mentality for art school, I feel like really I would say the main thing, the first thing that comes to mind when you're going into art school and you're going through it is you got to have the drive for it. I mean, if you're really going to pursue a creative career, whether that's being a painter like me or anything else, graphic design, illustration, whatever it may be, you got to have this passion, you know, flowing in you. And it's just one of those things where, like, if I were to think about it and ask myself, could I ever not do this? Like, I could honestly say, like, there's no way I could not do this. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm not getting paid for it, like, I'm still going to be doing this.
Yeah.
It's in my bones. And it's just one of those things. And for me, it was like, ever since I was a kid, it's just like, I know that this is what I love, and it just never really stopped. So it's different for everybody, but I think really the main thing that I see for every professional artist, I guess you could say, or someone who makes it into more of a career, is they just have an immense drive for it. They have a passion and a desire to do it that's just intrinsic to who they are. And yeah, I would say that you really got to ask yourself and be honest with yourself and say, like, is this really something that I want to pursue? And like, is it something that I feel I could spend my life doing? And yeah, that's just, I think, one of the most important questions to ask yourself going into art school. And it's the thing that's going to carry you through it. So when you're learning and, you know, you may not be the best going into art school, you'll see people who are like way above you and technique wise. And but nonetheless, it's just such a passion that you have where you're going to desire to be at a higher level and constantly learn. So that's another part of it where I think the art school aspect relates to being out of art school, is this constant desire to learn and be better and like to expand your horizons. So that's going to be another thing that's, I think, extremely important for pursuing a career, is like a constant desire for growth and going outside of your comfort zone, I guess you could say. So yeah, those are kind of the first things that pop into my mind.
And I loved how you brought up maintaining that curiosity to learn. I think, you know, sometimes in our culture, there's this, you know, pursuit of being the specialist in something, you know, when in reality, the curiosity and the propensity for learning new things oftentimes is what gets you that, you know, the ability to do what you love for a living, do what you're passionate about for a living. You know, speak to that for a little bit, if you don't mind. What is it that, you know, that you have learned recently or beyond art school that kind of maybe made it more of a reality that you could do this as a living?
Yeah, I think for me, it was just like, just a constant thing where I wanted to really get my work out there. Yeah. So for me, it's like, Like, I'm always learning about how to market myself and like the new types of ways of selling your art and all this stuff. There's just, it's a constant evolution in today's society where there's so much like new websites and platforms that you could use to allow your work to get out there. So I feel like I'm always learning about that. And the things that really inspire me though to move forward with it is really any person who has like just told me about how their work, my work has impacted them or something they appreciate. I mean, that really, that means so much to me. And you know, when I have a collector who's like bought my work and they make a phone call to me and they like, I had one person who he bought my piece like maybe a year or two ago, and he just called me like fairly recently, and he was just telling me about, man, I really love this piece and it's hanging on my wall. I tell everybody about it. Like, this is what I love that I'm seeing here. And, you know, just that type of thing really, like, that's why I'm doing it. You know, it's just to allow people to have this sense of, you know, just expansion above themselves and to experience something beautiful. And, yeah, it just really warms my heart whenever I hear something like that. Or so that's really what it's all about in terms of like the whole professional and marketing aspect for me.
That's interesting to hear that, because you know, sometimes you know, as a creative person, that kind of business side of it, right? It's not always covered. It's not always approached in art schools or even in you know, professional circles. You know, what is it? Where did you pick up on that? Is that something you had to learn the hard way, or did you kind of go through a class of some sort to really teach you how to be that, you know, marketer and advocate of your own work?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I was fortunate where Academy, where I went, Academy of Art University, I'm one of the people who really speak highly of the school. Like, I honestly loved the painting program there. And I mean, I definitely learned a ton. Like, I owe a lot to the teachers there, and I could name so many of them that just had such an impact on me. And, you know, they were the type of school that opened that up to you as well, the business aspect coupled with the creative aspect as well. So there were definitely classes on it, and they would cover like, okay, this is how you present your work. This is how you write a contract, and your business dealings with a gallery or a client who's commissioning something. So yeah, all of that was definitely covered, but I think it only becomes a reality when you're actually doing it in real life, you know, like, cause it's all kind of conceptual when you're in school and you're like, okay, I know, like, I have to write a contract and all this stuff. But then when you're in real life, it's so easy to just say, like, I don't really feel like writing something up. Like, can't I just sell the
own?
But, you know, there's so many negative experiences where an artist hasn't been paid, or they just had a loss because they didn't have the proper documentation for what they were doing. So I'm always telling my students, like, in terms of the business aspect of it, is like, make sure you get everything in writing, be very specific, you know, it doesn't have to be super elaborate, but you want to be very specific about like, okay, you'll get paid this much at this time, and then you'll get, and then you'll get this at this time. And so that way it's all laid out. It's clear cut. Nobody's wondering about anything. And, you know, it just gives you more security that way. So yeah, that's definitely a big piece, you know, is it just understanding the, you know, there's so many people out there who will take advantage like individual people. There's even gallery establishments that will take advantage of their artists. So, you know, if you're looking into a gallery, you better like research it, maybe talk to somebody who's been in that gallery or had experience working with them. And that way you'll understand like, okay, is this a reputable place? Like, should I actually make a deal with this organization? So I feel like that's an important thing too. Like if you're getting into gallery oriented stuff, like what I do, really know that gallery. And yeah. One of the best ways is just to network and maybe contact some of the artists that are in that gallery and see how they're doing. And they'll give you an honest answer, you know, because if you contact the gallery, of course, they're going to tell you, you know, we're stupendous, like we're great. But you'll get a more honest answer by the artist actually exhibiting there. So, yeah, you know, I've heard both sides of it. Some galleries are fantastic. They pay their artists on time. And so there's others that will just sell their work and not even tell them and not even pay them. So you definitely want to avoid that.
Well, yeah, that's definitely
a crazy thing.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like there's a little bit of an investigative side, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's very common in a city environment because in more expensive cities like San Francisco, you'll have galleries that are like, oh man, I got my lease here. And, you know, if they can't make the money, then they're just going to sell the piece and pocket everything. And they'll completely just leave the artists in the dirt and not really tell them. I've definitely heard instances where that's happened and you just got to be careful, you know. So that's the sort of thing where if you even hear it happening once, I would pull out. Definitely, you know, you have the right, like you're the owner of your work, like you're the creator. So ultimately you are the one who decides where your work should be. So you just have to be smart about it.
Yeah, so, that ownership, that, you know, advocacy, that, you know, maintaining that agency over your own personal domain, creative domain, I think is a great lesson for the up and coming artists. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing I would say that is a very important thing is not to devalue your work. I think with artists, there's a very common tendency to say like, my work isn't worth that much. So, but you know, it's definitely has value. You know, you spent this time on it and you have to consider all the work that you've put into this piece and you know, don't underestimate that because that's a big thing is it's so easy. You know, artists tend to be very sensitive and kind of shy people a lot of the time. I know I am. And so a lot of the time it's very easy to just be like, oh, I just want to kind of skimp on the price. But you have to really understand the value of your work and not be afraid to have some integrity with what it's actually worth to people. And not only monetarily, but what it's worth, you know, in the long run in terms of the conceptual side of it and what it brings to the world. So that's another big thing I would say is just don't devalue your work, you know, see it for what it is.
That's what a great lesson. And you know, if there's you know, artists out there who are listening and they're hearing that, you know, they can get that bump that they need in their own, you know, the valuation of their own time, you know, and you know, every other line of work has, you know, their own valuation or how it's valued, and yearly salary, hourly, you know, if you're an artist producing work, you know, monetize it in a similar fashion, right? That's your time. That's your life that's being put into this. And so there should be you know, just compensation for it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, you know, and, you know, if it helps you to analyze it in that way where you track your hours, you know, that's a good way. But, you know, just ask yourself, like, okay, what is this truly valued? And I think oftentimes it's much higher than you may think. And you can look, another thing that can help is look at artists who are out there who are kind of doing the same work that you're doing. And what is their work valued? And so you could ask yourself, like, how does my work compare to that? And how should I see the value in terms of that way in a more practical sense? So that would be another way of doing it as well.
And you know, that's a great place to leave it at, I think, for this conversation is, you know, do your investigative work, trust your instincts, and don't sell yourself short, right? And there's a buyer out there for every piece, and especially if you feel like you put a little bit of yourself into it.
Exactly.
Time notwithstanding, but even a little bit more of yourself into it, then it is worth what you think it's worth, you know, and possibly more. So what a great lesson for artists out there. So thanks again for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. And like what I always say is, like, people will care about your art as much as you do. So if you care about your art, somebody else is going to care for it too, and they're going to find value in it. So that's one thing that really sticks with me.
That's a good sentiment. And so thanks again for joining us and giving us your time and your space. And hopefully, you know, we're not keeping you in that cold car too long for this interview, but thanks for joining me and carving out time for this. And it's always a great time breaking down the work with you.
For sure. It's such a pleasure to be on, Kyle. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you so much. And we'll see you back here again soon. All right.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Special thanks to Jaime Santiago Longa for joining us again on this episode of Artivism Now. You can find him on Instagram at Jaime Santiago Longa, on his website at jaimelonga.com. He continues to be the most listened to artist out of all the amazing people we've been interviewing here on this program. So go check out his stuff, follow the Instagram, and remember, artists out there, keep it lit. Let it flow. Let it mean something. And goodbye.